Hopefully this is a session you plan to be on. Thanks for joining us for the last session. We're closing out Build Together, and we're very excited to be here with you.
My name is Lynette Reed. I'm a senior visual designer in the Windows Design Group.
I'm Rob Cameron. I'm in the DX Core Engineering team, working with our top GISV partners. And we're pretty excited to be here with you today to talk to you about the design process and the developer process. I had the opportunity to start working with Lynette about a year ago as a developer on a few different projects, including the Media App sample, where Lynette did all the designs for those. And along the way, what I learned is that design is really a very technical process as well. I learned so much about design, and what we thought would be great would be to bring that to the audience at Build, both for existing designers to see that, hey, you know, Microsoft platform is really a design-friendly environment, and also to show, to let see developers see the greatness that you see in working with a fantastic designer like Lynette. So with that, I'll just kick it off.
Thank you, Rob.
You bet.
Okay. So we're going to talk a little bit about the designer process that you run through. So first key is to actually put yourself in the perspective of them and think like a designer. So very much like in development, design is the same way. We have key, you know, processes that we actually go through as well, and I'm sure some of you might already know this as well if you're designing yourself or if you work with a designer. So of course, we go through a brainstorm, you know, kind of phase where we kind of think of the idea of what an actual app or product can actually be. We then go through our mood boards and the concept designs at a high level as far as what we're going to conceptually do. Then you go into sketching and wireframing the actual execution of it, and then actually design. And in between the sketching and wireframing design, there's a lot of iterations that can flow in between those as far as going back and forth. From there, you jump into actually prototyping. And then testing, which is through research, making sure that you know you're resonating as far as what your actual target is for what you're doing, or tweaking different things along the way. Let's see if ones actually work. And then once again, you're iterating the design to make sure that it's you know what you actually wanted is an end product.
Wait a minute, are you writing code here? You say prototyping code. What are you talking about here? This sounds like development. Wait a minute.
I know it sounds like development, but we actually do it as well. From design, you have to go through and think about, you know, is this the best? You have to test it, make sure it's resonating with the audience for user research and everything else. So the same coin, we're doing the same thing, just different phases of the process.
Makes sense.
Yes. So as Rob had pointed out, we're going to go through and actually break down two different apps that we're going to use through the session. So I'm going to talk about them at the high level. So first, you know, of course, you can access our samples at GitHub. They're readily available. Some are going to be coming out later. But for now, we do have some existing currently. The first app that we're going to actually use is the Media Sample. We talked about that. Actually, Jonathan Wiedemann had talked about that with Karen Kessler on Wednesday. And we'll go through that again as far as in-depth what we're pulling from that. We're looking at leveraging four controls and patterns in this to actually create this new app we're going to do. So we use a list control, the features section of the carousel, and then the detail page from it. And then the other app that we're going to use is the Sites to See app, which was actually part of one of the workshops that was happening throughout the entire build this year. So we're actually taking from that the split view and then the map view as well. So now that we've gotten you know kind of understanding of the apps that we're going to break down, it's time to get cooking and actually make a real app. So give me a second, because you know what? When you're actually going through the process of it, it's kind of like cooking, and you can get a little dirty, so we're going to get all ready for it. Okay. So the primary step you run through is actually, you know, prepping what will be this tasty design that we're going to go through. So we have to look at the core ingredients that we're actually pulling for to make this app, which is going to be two parts app sample, six-part Windows template, one part Windows control, and then using our color palette as well as a pinch of consistency that we've worked on to ensure that apps are the way that they should be. And as I mentioned, we're going to be pulling some of the samples from GitHub that you can access as well. And we're also going to be pulling resources from our resources and downloads for design, and we're going to utilize the Illustrator templates that we have, as well as the color palettes too. And in addition, talking about the whole consistency effort, if you go to dev.windows.com/design, there's examples illustrating the consistency that we're working on to ensure that things are aligning properly. So now we have like the core pieces of it. So now it's all about making it actually tasty.
I'm starting to get hungry.
Are you? That's a good thing. So the first thing is coming up with a concept of what an actual brand would look like. So for this app, we wanted to make sure it was sweet, but also savory too. And it had a juxtaposed kind of feel to it. So how can you do that? First, it comes up with the actual branding, which was very light for this, as well as looking at elements that you can introduce into it that make it a little bit more fun and unique. With font treatments that might be a little bit different, you know, a color palette that's kind of interesting, and then photography. And to take it one step further is the art of actually creating the photography. Yes, I actually made all of these cupcakes and went through the process of doing the photo shoot just to ensure that we were getting the quality and level that we needed to have for the app. Oh no, I'm having a problem. Hang on one sec. I'm stuck. Can you help me?
Yes.
Can we switch? Okay. Sorry about that. You guys.
Oh, wait. Oh, you still need your Illustrator, though. Oh, it was just for the deck?
Yeah.
Okay.
So my game froze. Sorry about that, you guys.
So Office is updating right now and just decided that it needs to force a reboot. So apologies for that.
I thought I was set. I updated this morning, but.
Wow. Which were you at?
So right down.
Right here?
Yeah. So we can jump into that and hopefully we can fix.
All right.
Okay. Okay, so as I was talking about the photography, you know, interplaying and putting that in there to make sure it really kind of amps up the style and look and feel of the actual experience. So this is the actual app itself that I'm going to break down and show you what I threw together and how it was created so you guys can get the hands-on approach of how it's actually implemented. And I hope this doesn't make it an issue. Okay.
I'll keep this going. Okay, great.
Okay. We're going to let Office do its background thing as far as its updates while we're using Illustrator. Switch. Okay, so I'm going to jump into Illustrator. Actually, I'm going to show you one other thing first. And you got awesome Owlie back there. He's one of my favorite cupcakes I enjoyed making. So as I had mentioned, we have the Illustrator templates that you can use and actually build and design your applications through. And when you download it, you get the actual Illustrator, the templates, which are cross-device. And then you also get our Windows controls as well. I'm going to take a minute, I'll open up the controls, but I'm going to show you a little sneak peek of something that's going to be coming out with the announcement of Xbox, you know, now being part of the UWP story. We also have an artboard incorporated in that as well. Oh, don't freak out. Okay, we'll wait a second for it. Okay. So this is the controls themselves and what you actually get. So they're real easy to kind of drag and drop and grab an element and put it into play where you need to actually use it, which is really helpful, you know, to get yourself in a level set as far as a base of the different content. It also has in here, aside from numerous controls, the colors too, if you just want to use the colors that we have for just the user. You can also incorporate your brand colors as well, you know, because you want to make it unique for your actual app. But these are readily available, too, that you can identify that have been tested to make sure that they are accessible and they work well for a 4-to-5 ratio. It also has a system colors as far as the gray themselves, as well as talking about the actual default typography ramp as far as our type, too. So I'm also going to jump in. See, too many things opening at once. So as I mentioned about the, here we go, about the fact that we have a new Xbox artboard. So this is what it actually looks like when you open it. And I'm using the version that shows Xbox in it.
from.
Okay. So you have your primary ones, which is a 5-inch phone that we typically request if you're going to design across the whole entire ecosystem to hit most of the actual pivots and points within the system, and then an 8-inch tablet, as well as a 13-inch laptop. And then additionally, you can also get a 23-inch, and then also the Xbox, which I will scan all the way over here, which is designed, this is showing the XAML version, which would, you would design at 540p, and then would scale up effectively 200% to 1920 by 1080 size. So that means you actually design at 540, and you would also develop as well at 540p. And the system would automatically do it for you. So now we have the base on that. I'm going to get into the fun world of what I'm actually doing for the app. So I'm going to pull up the tone and the color palette that is incorporated with it. And I thought I would also show you some other little bits and pieces as well, because it's talking about the actual process of what you go through. Wait for it to load. There we go. Okay. Oh, it's not loading. It's taking a while. Okay. I can show you some of the initial sketches that I had actually conceptually thinking of what the app could be itself. So I want to introduce parallax into this because that's not something we currently have in many of the app experiences, and I know we're pushing to really stretch what we're doing moving forward. So introducing parallax into the actual piece, as well as finding other little delighting moments in there as well. I looked at different things as far as having a hero header at the top that was a little bit more enticing and would have a carousel and then also content below. And so that's kind of the base of it from that. So typically when I design, I start off with a new artboard. We have the cool templates you can use. You can, you know, just drag and drop in the content in there. But I have a tendency to go really long with my actual designs. So I find it's easier for me personally to just start with a new artboard. And then at that point, interject all of the elements or drop it in if I need to after. So for sake of time right now, I'm just going to open one I've already started just to show you on that. So this, we're going to start a desktop at the 1920 by 1080 size. And what I'm showing right here is something that a lot of us designers actually incorporate into our designs just to make sure we're snapping to certain points and making sure we're allowing the greatest flexibility for imagery. So I'm using a 12-column grid on here. And if you notice there's a 72 on one side and a 24 on the other, that's because I'm also accounting for the our split view menu that's on the left-hand side. And I'll show you that as we introduce that into the element. So keeping consideration of that, as well as the 24-pixel padding that we have that are effective pixels on both sides, that's kind of part of the consistency endeavor as well. So let me jump in, and I'll start actually designing for you. And it's fun designing on stage for my first time. OK, so we're going to get the board set. Well, stuff's off stage. I'm doing something just to be considerate of the fact of designing for Xbox. So in when you're designing for phone to PC, you can use absolute black and you can use absolute white. But when you go to Xbox, you have to think of the calibration due to the fact of broadcast safe colors. So one consideration you can take into play is actually designing it with it already clipped, so that when you bring it over, it's no longer, you know, extra work that you have to consider. That's one thing you can consider, but you can choose to also use the full ramp and then just clamp appropriately when you get to Xbox. So we have that. I'm going to drop in the element for, let me get close. Bring it down here. There we go. Okay. So here's our menu that we have into play here for this guy. And then we're going to take additionally. And here's, I wanted to show you guys too. So the actual split menu or split view, when you open it, it's a max of 32 pixel effective pixels width. If you decide to add additional menus over to the side, consider keeping it the same 30 or 320 pixel width just to maintain the same kind of aesthetic look and feel of it. So, okay. We'll grab this guy. We'll see if I can be super fast for you guys. I'm usually like really fast when I'm designing at the office. So we'll throw in a quick treatment as far as the actual header area. Okay. And then we will grab some branding really quick. One thing to consider as well is just as far as like making sure your image sizes actually are divisible by 4. That will help you when you're designing across the system as well. Jonathan Wiedemann had mentioned about, you know, designing of the 4-pixel grid, which is a great style and way that we do internally and we suggest for others as well. The system will pick it up, it will render really well and work really well across the system. So there's this. And snazzy little title bar in here. And we'll grab some other elements too. Okay. Got this guy, and then we're going to turn it into a carousel. And effectively, this is actually the same exact element that we use for the media sample. We have it into play into two parts in the actual home page. One is the TV, and one is the media tile incorporated in there. It's kind of nice, you know, if you want to have more content displayed for users and to be able to let them actually see what's going on, and you want to serve up more to kind of drill them into different areas. It's always nice.
Yeah, so as a developer, you would naturally think of the flip view as the control to use here.
Yep. And then we're going to throw in pivots really quick, because that's always fun. One thing that I was conceptually trying to push for was taking pivots instead of making them a flat context. When you would actually page up, it would actually be a dynamic, you know, kind of title that would interplay, or dynamic pivots. So it would stick, and then the content would scroll underneath. Which is a metaphor, you know, you can see commonly in other places as well, and it just seemed like a nice nod and way for a user to be able to flow through the pages and actually have context to that element. So that's this one as well. And that's, I mean, it's pretty straightforward and easy as far as building the content, just making sure that the sizes are correct, you're accounting for the different elements on it. See, and spacing correctly. I'm moving faster on my keys than the thing is actually going. So, yeah. Okay, so we got that in there. It's not perfect, and I'm usually pixel perfect. So we drop all these pieces in here. Ta-da, we'll get that over there. As well as some other elements. And get you in there.
So one of the things when I saw Lynette's design, it was interesting from a developer standpoint, I was thinking about the idea of having the pivot headers not at the top of the screen. So the idea is that you're gonna scroll the app up, and then the pivot section sort of locks. And so several ways come to mind as, you know, how do we implement that? So for the header, I thought it would be a hub section containing user control with the flip view and some indicators wired in together. And then I say as you scroll up, use the scroll position to basically remove that hub section dynamically so that the pivot then becomes the next hub section that has the pivot headers that Lynette's designed just put in there. Make that now the sort of top hub, and it locks the hub UI there. And the tricky part is that when you sort of scroll back up the page, as you get to where the top hub is just coming into view, you're going to want to add in that header hub dynamically so that the header looks like it's always there, and it just looks like the UI just kind of like, it looks like the menu just locks into place. And then when you get down to the next sessions that Lynette's building out, the idea was that the parallax would shift from sort of the top of the app to behind the content.
Yes, and I mean, that's key on this. Typically, you know, you have more density in an actual desktop experience. But looking at trying to create almost like a flip view experience, or sorry, a parallax experience with the different panels, it's key to actually have a little bit more breathing room. If you make it too small, then it doesn't allow for the reveal and kind of like the experiential of transitioning from the different areas. So that's why this one has a lot more breathing room and height within it that typically you wouldn't find in most of the apps unless you're trying to achieve something similar to that. It's also just because of the simple fact that it's rich imagery. It's based off of being more product focused, you know, where you're selling content and things of that sort. So anyways, quickly to illustrate, these are the quick little elements, just dragging them in, dropping them in. All the sizes we're accommodating just to make sure that they're, you know, hitting the actual mark of what they need to be for falling on the 4-pixel grid. I'll drop it in there, and then we'll call it good. Okay. Because it's fun to watch a designer actually design on the fly.
So for this section, you know, obviously a list view comes to mind.
Yes.
You know, the dynamic shapes probably have a couple of options. I mean, ideally, if you get the images cut and transparent, then you can still use a square container, and it would still, you know, obviously this circle part would look like, it would still look like a circle. The other option would be to do it dynamically and to, you know, where it is a square image, but you basically just center the circle and the main content to the right size, and then just change the control template on the button to be a circle instead, which there are a lot of examples out there, whether you know, that you can take a look at to implement something like that. But it's, you know, it's definitely nice to see something still flat, still modern design, but not always square.
And the other thing, too, is, I mean, on this example, while you're not seeing it, the concept is that the actual circles would grow in size as you go through. So you have one as the center of focus. So there's a lot of room to actually play with your design, you know, speaking to the fact it doesn't have to necessarily look flat. That can have dimensional life, a little playful, you know, element to it. That really adds a delighter for people, you know, to experience. Like, they expect it to act one way, and then they're surprised with something that's kind of clever and cute. So it's always nice to add those little extra elements too when you're coming up with a design. So I will make myself wrap up. Say, okay. Oh, your mouse freaks me out every time. Okay, so we've actually gone through the process of that, and then.
So the kitchen timer just went off because we're cooking up an app here.
Yes. And then we'll jump back into. Now my thing will work. So you've actually created like one example. Wait, you're number 6, right?
6.
Okay. So you've started to work on one design, okay? I've designed, imagine it's done for a 1920 by 1080 desktop. I've done this design, and now I'm at the point of kind of a crossroads. You know, do I continue to work on it, or should I actually test it out? So it's the question of, you know, do you test the batter along the way? Do you have a couple friends actually test it out? Or you just say, hey, we're good. Let's just have the whole, you know, group kind of enjoy it and take it to the bigger party. So it's important to do testing along the way and make sure that you're doing what's best for your experience and helping as far as that. So now I will actually jump back in and show you what was actually the end product. It's a big file. Okay, so let me show you a little bit of what the actual end product is and what I'm speaking to. There we go, okay. So it's been created across device, and as we had before, I was starting to create it for the desktop scenario and how that would look with the rich imagery across the board and having panels that would kind of interplay. looking at having some kind of element on the right-hand side to indicate the fact that you could actually scroll through the different sections. It's always nice to have some kind of indicator to tell users what they are actually going through. So that was implemented in there. And once again, just really clean, keeping almost like a templated style, but allowing the imagery to be the focus of what you're actually doing in this. So it works really well across here. And of course, as you start to reduce down what was a list view with, you know, five items, as you start like scaling down, it has the responsiveness of like, you know, collapsing down content of it. But it's able to maintain most of the integrity of it when you're looking at a laptop view, as well as when you're looking at it from a tablet view as well. You're able to incorporate it. Of course, the consideration, as most of us know, when you get to the mobile experience, you know, you have to kind of respond and collapse content just based on the real estate that you have on the screen. So looking at the reduction of stuff and bringing things into different elements versus having them kind of extracted out. So that's that one. Also, for Xbox, just based on the area, it works pretty well. There's just the considerations you have as far as like the actual safe area. I still used a 12-column on here. I was able to use 12-column pretty much across the entire board of the entire app, except for phone. Typically, I use a 6-column, you know, kind of grid when I'm designing for that space, just to help as far as making sure that I'm not having too much density. You can if you want to go larger, but it seems to be a nice blend to be able to get the images and everything else appropriately in.
And so if you notice there, when Lynette showed the Xbox design, it was designed at half 1080p from a design perspective, because Xbox will scale XAML apps at 200%. So it's definitely a great way to go and to think about the full tailoring to each platform. Now, the other option that you do have is you can stick to the 1080p design, and you can call the try disable scaling API when you're on Xbox to basically turn off the scaling. And as the thing to consider is that, as Lynette mentioned, is that if you turn off scaling and you go native 1080p with your design and you actually build the 1080p, you take the risk of your app being not super viewable at 10 foot. As you know, so there's sort of a bit of a trade-off there, but just something to consider and think about. Like when I first saw these designs, I was really blown away. I thought this is definitely a huge challenge to tackle. And how, you know, what are the different ways to meet our deadlines when you're working with a designer? Those are just some of the considerations to think about.
So some of the few other sections that would apply for the pivot control itself. Having a list, so this is utilizing, once again, the media sample as far as the list view. So creating ones where it's different views of the actual content, where you might have one that actually scrolls or it can be fixed, and then horizontally and one that's vertically, allowing you to see the content with an actual button to allow you to actually load more. And then repurposing kind of a carousel or flat image in the bottom again to help kind of reinforce that. As you can see, once again, apply the across all of the screens with this same kind of consideration. You know, you try to reflow content as much as you can where you need to, and then otherwise maintain it as much as you can. But it all depends on your app's need and what you're trying to actually achieve for each app. And so this would be the third pivot on this. More blog style as far as the content and allowing the images to be there, as well as having clickable images in play in this one. As you see, once again, you're able to collapse it pretty well. You know, you want to keep the density for your mobile experience just due to the fact of small viewing area and being able to play with the actual phone. And then here's an example of the details page, my favorite cupcake, Owly. This one is literally pulled from the media sample with just collapsing a few of the elements. So once again, you could take what exists from the template or the sample that we have and just literally strip different elements out that you want and then just take it, repurpose it, and run with it. So you can just do what you want to do for your actual app experience. So that's this one across the board. The button itself is utilized from our common control set, so that's something that's just, you know, native that's incorporated in there, so you don't have to worry about additional things. I wanted to show an example if you were just to use, you know, the core elements that are there. And last but not least, we have, of course, the map, which was from Sites to See. And as you see, you know, it works pretty well for desktop as far as the same flow. For Xbox, of course, you're going to want to consider at this point, there's going to be a difference in modality of having a free cursor, which is the same kind of, you know, feel of how it is when you're looking at the web browser, Edge, when you're on Xbox. So you're going to have a little indicator that kind of follows around because you're going to want to have that to be able to, you know, discover through the map experience as well as dive into the list item itself. And the style there compared to the way it's actually created for mobile is a little different, just because of, you know, how much content you're getting on the screen and allowing people to actually discover what is on the map and also the list items below. So that's a little bit different on the approach there as well. So you have room to play. There's a lot of different models and patterns that you can put in, and that's basically it for this one. So I will pass it off to Rob now.
All right.
So now for me to get cooking, just put my apron on, roll up my sleeves, break out my compiler, turn on my
mic. Here we go. Awesome. So Lynette and I, you know, we teamed up. We're going to build this session. I'm like, all right, let's, you know, Lynette really wanted to push the platform and do something different. And so it's always tempting to keep your designer in the box, right? Because you're the one that has to build it. I said, no, just get out of the box. Let's really innovate. Let's do something really unique and different. As you see, it's a pretty compelling application, I mean, that Lynette had just shown us. And when I looked at it, and this was like about 3 weeks ago, and Lynette cranked these designs out super fast, and I said, I can't code that fast. I can't get all that done as fast. I said, well, let me see what I can do. I said, I didn't want to put Lynette in a box and say, well, let's just show the media designs, or let's show these designs, that designs. I said, let's show where we want to go. Let's show where we are. And what I'm going to show you is where is some of the code are, some of the thought process that we have in implementing this. So we will get the code in just a second. But I kind of wanted to set it up that this is a very challenging app to tackle here. One thing to consider is the cross-device platform considerations. I mentioned these a little bit. Down underneath, they have sort of the native resolution of what the platform support. Of course, you know, laptops. Actually, these are sort of our targets and our breakpoints. So you're building a responsive UI. We sort of say, if I'm targeting a laptop, I'm going to have a breakpoint at a width of 1366. The desktop and the Xbox is a 1920 width device. Now, phone, tablet, you know, we look at the width of, you know, 480 for phone or 360. Usually the 5-inch of the 480 or the 1024 for tablet. And so we use those in our adaptive trigger when we're building out the application, and I'll show you that in a second. And as I mentioned, you always have to think about scaling. My laptop is a high DPI device. By default, Windows set the scale factor to 250%. Now, we say the desktop is 150%, but if you're on a high DPI device, it's different. But if I build an app to 1080p resolution, it looks great on my 1080p backup laptop here, and it looks just as great on my my high DPI laptop, because of scale factor. So what that means is that I can set my font at 20 pixels and let the platform and scale factor sort of make my app look great, whether I'm running on a high DPI device or a low DPI device. Just a common question we get a lot is, you know, how do I tailor my app? Like, what are effective pixels? The idea is that you set it to the design size and then you let the system scale it. But it's good to be aware of it, as I mentioned. You know, you can design at half 1080p, but if that's not a standard design that you build to and you don't have for, if you have a full HD design, just turn off scaling in the platform. We offer that flexibility. All right, so some of these samples that we have, you've probably seen the Windows Universal samples. We're going to dive into the dev demo. Let me minimize this, bring up Visual Studio. So I have the Contoso Suites app here. What I want to mainly focus on is that main view that Lynette spent time coding on. Let's see, we'll shut that down. Some of the things I wanted to mention is it is a hub. So we have the hub section. I set the data plane, and it's pretty simple. This is just sort of my initial cutout disk to build out the header. Pretty straightforward. This might be the natural take that you might want to take with it to get going. But I'll cover in a, I'm gonna switch over to a media app sample for UI, but I just wanted to show you the Contoso Suites application. And one of the things, another common question is, hey, how do we build this out? Where do we put our adaptive triggers? So you can put them in a couple different places. The key, though, is that you want your adaptive triggers to impact within the hub control. So just keep that in mind. Now, the sample, we mentioned a media app sample. If you've been to the design session, let me just fire this up real quick. I will run it locally here. Run this out. As you can see, it's soon to be released to GitHub. It'll be posted on GitHub under the Microsoft sort of organization at GitHub in the TV helpers section of GitHub this month, the next couple of weeks. We're very close. You'll see when I get to it. What we did, we started from the ground up, like you knew it. We started with a data layer. We built out our models. We built out our view models. And then now we're building out the UI to match the designs of the net build out. But you know, we're kind of close. We're getting here to see some of the likenesses of the other app. We had the flip view. You know, things I'm missing, like the indicators for the flip view, we gotta put those in. But we do have the lists and the, if you know, we can kind of drill into details. And you scroll into details and get the information about it. Now this is very square, very modern, very typical. And again, that's why we decided to do this session, to say, hey, this is where we want to go. Lynette was the inspirational designer challenging me as a developer where we want to be. And then I'm showing you where we're at now. And we will ship the Contoso Suites app probably later in May or May timeframe once I get some time to tackle it. But let's get back to the code. Now, I mentioned earlier about how you might, where you want to put your adaptive triggers. Actually, let me show one thing along those lines. Let's run it again real quick. So Lynette went through the some of the considerations in her design when you're going across platforms. So here, notice my queue is on the main section. We're on a desktop, we're on the Xbox, you have plenty of room. But then as we kind of slide over, in Jonathan Wiedemann's section, he talks about repositioning. And it should, oh, so here we go. Oh, say, I'm sorry, a little bit of a bug here. You see how the queue kind of popped in underneath? There's an adaptive trigger that's essentially enabling this queue to be visible, and then this queue is supposed to hide, so apologize for that. I might have been mid-update. But the idea is that, as Jonathan Wiedemann mentioned, is that you want to reposition content as your screen gets smaller. So when you go to mobile or you go to a tablet where it's portrait, you put the queue down here and then remove the queue from the top, because as you can see, if you leave the queue on the main header on a smaller screen, it gets a little messy. But that's all done via trigger. So let me show you where that code and how you want to handle that with that hub, because it is not completely straightforward. So I scroll on down to the main view XAML page here. And we get into it. So there's the hub control, and then the hub section. And then within the data template, we put a user control right inside the data template. And the reason why, which may seem a little weird, now, not completely weird, like it's pretty common to use user controls. You can reuse them across your UI, and we definitely are doing that from a UX standpoint. But the main reason why you have to, if you want to put adaptive triggers onto a onto content that's within the hub section, you have to put the Visual State Manager code within the user control that's set as the data template for that hub. So that's really one of the key things to keep aware of, to be aware of, is that when you're working with the container controls, you're going to need to put all your visual state information inside the user control. Now, actually, I see it as a benefit in the sense that it kind of keeps all of the code in XAML together and keeps it nice and clean, and it's a module, it's self-contained, and it's always adaptive and responsive in and of itself. But here you can see the visual state trigger is that there's an adaptive trigger when the min width is of 1024. The vertical cube should be hidden, and then the other cube becomes visible. And so we have just a couple of adaptive triggers that fire when we hit those states, and that's what's changing it. So very simple, no code written in the code behind to make that happen. Now, that's all the visual side. We spent a lot of time on the visual. What really excites me about this sample is the amount of code that's there that you can get started to build your application today. You can pull out the UI, you can swap out the model. That's what I literally started doing with the Contoso Suites application. I took the media app sample, I pulled out the models, I pulled out the view models. I kind of used them as a guide, and like within just a few hours, I had my data coming into the UX, and now it's just a matter of writing the rendering code to make it beautiful within the UX, and that was by just leveraging the sample that we're going to share with you in this month for sure. So here's all the models that we have that you would expect for a TV, you know, model, whatnot. But the thing that is, also the other part that's very interesting is that there are many things that go into building an application: analytics, logging, crash dump collection, rate my app, share my app, all that type of sort of, you know, lunch pail, blue collar functionality that you, they're all best practices that you want to put in your app, that it does take dev cycles, it takes time to kind of implement those background tasks, pushing notifications, just all the code that you have, all the boilerplate code to just get that platform integration, that's all going to be built into this sample. So it's way more than a UX sample than we had before. It's actually an app that you can sort of rip out the other stuff, take advantage of the code that we have there. And it's written in a very dependency injection safe way, meaning if you don't like the authentication, we have an authentication model. You can authenticate with the Microsoft account. You can authenticate with Azure AD. Or if you stand up your own authentication service, if you have an existing authentication service, you can use JSON web tokens or whatever format tokens you use to do that authentication with your backend service. All the sort of boilerplate code is there to get you started. But if you don't need authentication, you can just remove that service and remove the, just, you know, pull out the UI pretty easily. And you're not going to sit there and have to fix like 100 compilation errors to get it working again. The idea is that you can sort of pull stuff out as you need it, but we figure it's better to put it in there, let you see it, and then you can take it out as you need to. Let me look here. That's probably the main thing that I wanted to cover here. Any questions, feel free to jump in if you have any. I guess the other main sample I wanted to show you is, as Lynette mentioned, there was a pretty significant effort around consistency, and I'll run this sample on the Xbox. I'll send that over there. We'll see how it looks. Okay. So here we have a pretty basic sample. It has a few pages that you can navigate to: the split view, control, basic page, command bar page. We took this sample, we pulled it into our sample, because we say, hey, the XAML team said, hey, this sample is how we think the split view should look, work, and behave responsively across all the platforms. So we grabbed those internal best practices, we're putting them into our sample so that we can get the best practices that Microsoft is using with all of our internal apps across all of the apps. And again, also to save you from writing the code. The biggest thing when you're thinking about Xbox is accessibility. If you write your app to be accessible to where you can navigate the app with the keyboard, you can sort of think about having a controller-based experience that's more of a premium experience of what you get today on Xbox with Netflix, Hulu, et cetera, all of our partner apps that we have on Xbox One today that are all controller-based. The default behavior is going to be cursor, as Lynette mentioned, because we need to keep the UWP promise of all apps who exist in the store today will run on Xbox if you decide to check that box in the store when the store is available for Xbox to just put your app out there. We'll scale your app, we'll pillow box your app, as Lynette mentioned, to make sure that it's in the TV safe area, and we'll give you a mouse cursor so that the controller is like driving a mouse like in the browser on IE. But if you want to do more of the premium experience where you have the controller integration, and it's a good thing to do anyway, obviously, is to build with accessibility in mind and keyboard control in mind, because the controller maps to the keyboard. The A button is essentially space or enter. The thumbstick is essentially the arrow keys. And the B button on the controller maps to the backspace B on the desktop. So let's just come back over here. We'll bring this app over to the desktop real quick. So So I'll switch this to run on the desktop just to show one other thing. Since we did talk about Xbox a lot this year, finally, it's very exciting to release it. I've been to Build 3 years in a row talking about Xbox, and I'm super excited to be here and to see it come to fruition. So I'm going to run this sample on my desktop locally. And I'm going to plug in the keyboard here. So the build is started. We'll see how this goes. Any questions or any feedback? All right. I see this guy running. I wonder if it's in my start menu. It might already be here. If it is, I can fire it up. There we go. So here's a sample. Now, notice I'm using the controller to navigate this sample, just like on Xbox. The reason why that works is because it's the same operating system, it's the same platform, it's a UWP platform, it's that promise. It's the idea that just killed it because I redeployed it. But the idea is that if you're on an airplane, you know, you could think about bringing a controller on the airplane and sort of using it to develop your application. But you could instead, knowing the key mappings, if you wanted to test your application out, if you don't have an Xbox One or you don't want to buy one because you're not a gamer, but you still want to put your app into the store, you can connect a controller directly to your PC and maybe use the simulator set to 1080p to develop for Xbox. So it's just another alternative to think about where to take the platform. Now let's just look at this code real quick from an accessibility standpoint, just some of the key things. Again, focus control, tabbing is super important in your application. And then I will just mention that if you look at the sample, let me get to the right page here. There we go. You see all the responsive triggers in this sample as well. And when I get down to the, let me see the split view page. There we go. Bring this up. Scroll on down so we get to the actual menu. Essentially what I was looking for is the tooltip and the calls for narrator, but essentially the accessibility programming APIs, you know, you set the tooltip, set the tab focus, and then set the call the accessibility APIs. Just put that all in your XAML, and that'll just help all of that work really well for obviously accessibility reason as well as Xbox. With that, let me switch over and we can take some questions. All right. So.
Okay, well. We kind of talked about the cupcake. We got to show it. It's coming out eventually.
Yes, Yay. It awesome. Will come out in May, June time. For first thing, priority is to finish off the MeetApp sample because we want to get that to you guys as soon as possible.
So to get started, as far as getting your app up, you can visit these URLs to get more information and help you kind of launch into your experience of what you need to cover. We also are doing the flash mob, so feel free to show up just out the doors and, you know, answer some questions and get some points as well. Go, go, go. Your mouse doesn't like me.
Oh, man.
And then we seriously appreciate your feedback, so definitely evaluate our session and let us know what you think. And see, it doesn't like me. It's the scroll. I'll let you control it. And then we'll consider Cupcake Achievement Unlocked just for a little Xbox love there, too. And yeah, see, we're happy. And that's it. So thank you, guys.
And if you're so inspired by Lynette's designs and you want to build Cupcake app for me, go to my blog, email me. I'll sign you up. We'll put you part of the team, and we'll knock it out. Thank you very much for attending the session. And I hope you had a great build and a great trip back home.
Yeah.
Thank you.